on 2FM.
It's Monday, the 29th of July, June even.
It is. Coming up today, we will talk to Ken Kenny about Liverpool's latest league title. Yes, that is Kenny Dalglish, everybody.
Here's Salah. He's got a run on goal. He's still going. And Salah for Liverpool! Have a little bit of that! Mohamed Salah wraps it up and the roof comes off the famous old stadium once again.
Alan Colley talks League of Ireland, FA Cups and haircuts.
Now it's Byrne. Byrne with the shot. Oh, yes! Jack Byrne finds his range.
We ask Pillar Caffrey, will Jack ever be back?
Brilliant leap in the air. Up over Gavin White to win that. That's superb. Kieran Kilkenny, beautifully inside to Scully. They're moving and it's McCaffrey. McCaffrey drills it home. It's another goal for Jack McCaffrey.
And Seamus Heffernan joins us to discuss the double derby week.
Santiago Tiger Munch still coming on the near side. They're inside the final half furlong. Santiago is digging to the end. Santiago, 14 Irish derbies for Aidan O'Brien has held Tiger Munch.
Game on 2FM.
All that and much, much more between now and 7 o'clock. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Now, usually we start with our highlights of the weekend, but I think my highlight is coming up very, very shortly when we do talk to King Kenny. And if anyone has any questions, please send them into 51552. We're all very excited.
Yeah,
we knew that would make you smile, Marie.
Well, I'm glad you're doing something to make me smile. Usually it's the opposite.
That's nice, isn't it?
You're right, though. Normally we look at highlights, but Marie, I'd say it's still the highlight, isn't it? You know, like, I just met my brothers, massive Liverpool supporters, and the lift it's given Liverpool supporters has just been incredible. My nephew wanted to support Man City. Of course, he was young in school, and Man City were the trendy team. But my brother, no, you can't. You have to support Liverpool. Well, no, he's...
Glad he stuck with him.
He's reaping the rewards now, though. He's delighted.
Yeah, but it's hard to think, like, when City ran away with the league in 2017-2018... that someone could come along so quickly, turn it around, not just turn it around, but by win it by even more than City won it by. I mean, it's been an incredible transformation in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, and it definitely feels like they're just getting started as well. I am very excited, as we said, to speak to Kenny Dalglish very, very shortly. So just away from football then, guys, any highlights, Ruby?
Oh, the corner for me, Marie. Obviously, Seamus Heffernan winning the derby in Santiago for Aidan, but I thought magical yesterday in the Pretty Polly Stakes was magical. It was just to watch a horse that's so far ahead of the opposition. It's just to see how far the top ones are ahead of the rest. Obviously, she'll have to take on Enable and a few more down the line, the likes of Gaia, Japan, Lord North, all of those horses, but what she did yesterday in the corner was magical to watch.
Ruby, just on it, like, it shows a special horse. She could have just stayed there with the rest, but just to pull away and just show the class.
And to effortlessly pull away. The others were like, there were good horses behind her. I mean, Fleeting is a very good mare. So is KM Pepper, True Self. But Magical just moved away from them like they were standing still.
Seamus Heffernan was quite interesting afterwards. He said that exact thing, you know, it's just you put down the accelerator and away she goes. Is that what happens with all horses, Ruby?
No, unfortunately not, Marie. That's what makes it magical. Most horses don't do that. But Magical is able to. And look, she's been an incredible filly and it's great to see her back in training. Flat racing probably struggles to get the following it could deserve because so many horses don't stay in training. They're retired to stud and their commercial value is exploited. Whereas to keep them in racing as race horses, it's great to see.
Was Magical going to retire a little bit earlier? Was it the plan?
Yeah, it was chat of her retiring at the end of last season after she won the Champion Stakes at Ascot. As a 4-year-old, she could go to stud. But in fairness to the Cumhur operation, they've kept her in training and she's back now.
All right, now speaking of people who are back, Ruby.
Well, joining us on the line to make Marie Crowe happy is the last man to manage to lead Liverpool to a league title. It was the old First Division then, 30 years ago. But Kenny Dalglish, you must be a happy man in Liverpool this week.
Now, Kenny's phone line is gone, I'm afraid, so we are going to ring him back and hopefully we will get a better line because...
I'd say he's sick of being on it. Like, ever since they won, the man's been on the phone drinking champagne. How bad?
He's been flat out.
He put me in my box there from what I could hear. He's not the last man. Jurgen Klopp is, according to him, and that's it.
It's good to see you putting your box every now and again.
Well, it has to be done. It has to be done.
Yeah. It was news about Jack McCaffrey. Marie, what did you make of it?
Yeah, like, I mean, if it was anyone else, you'd be a bit shocked. But I think given the character of Jack McCaffrey and his personality, it's something that people have grown to accept almost, that he is a person who makes decisions that that are hard to make. And I'm sure it was a very hard one for him to make, to step away from the panel. But we're in very strange times. He does have a very busy life away from sport. It's an amateur sport, which takes up a huge amount of time, as anyone who's involved in and around GAA knows. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he does make it back. And even more interesting will be Kenny's line. Hopefully it's back. Kenny?
Back, yeah.
Brilliant. Delighted to hear that that we can chat to you. Just the last few days, Kenny, it must have been absolutely surreal and also very busy for you, I'd imagine.
No, it's been surreal. It's been fantastic. And no, I've not been busy. Played a game of golf at the weekend, and just the same as every other person that's got in a football club, enjoyed the last 3 or 4 days. It's all just happened overnight. This team, since Jurgen's come in, has been very positive and been onwards and upwards. They've won the Champions League, championships, and so he's been fantastic. And I think the boys had was really there, because they've been brilliant, not just this season but last season as well.
Kenny, you've done it in so many different ways, as a player, as a manager, as a player manager. What did it feel like this time to watch a club that you're so deeply associated with get over the line and claim the title?
I was never nervous that they weren't going to do it. You know, they're beaten. At the same time, realistic that as long as the players continue to do what they've done to get themselves in the position that they got themselves in, they were always going to be successful. And there are many ways to win a league title, but the best way, the best manager and the most points, that's what they did. And they threw in beside that fantastic entertainment as well. And the big names get an awful lot of publicity, and rightly so, with Salah and Firmino, Mane, Henderson's been missing. But a couple of young boys have done well as well. Andy Robertson and Joe Gomez, Trent Alexander-Arnold. They've got some young boys coming through that's going to back up what they've already got. And Alisson were two fantastic signings 18 months ago. So the whole thing just fitted together like a jigsaw puzzle. And thoroughly deserved, thoroughly enjoyable.
As you said, Kenny, it fitted together like a jigsaw puzzle, but I know they were very entertaining, but the record at the back is incredible. I mean, they've only conceded 21 goals in the league. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, three of them were in the last game, I think, before we shut down. Watford, 3-0, and that was maybe it was just a good time for us to get a break, because after that we get home with Atletico Madrid and get out of the Champions League. So maybe the coronavirus did us a bit of a favour, although we won it without it. It would be enough for other people. So they've been the best side by far, and thoroughly deserve the success that they've had.
I think the way
they've handled it as well has been unbelievable. I mean, the humanity of the players has been brilliant throughout this coronavirus, and the way they respect what the fans do for them has been remarkable as well. So they're not only the classic footballers, they're very very normal people. They just fortunately have a good job and are very good at it.
Kenny, that must fill you with pride, the fact that, one, they are full of humility and they're normal people doing a very good job, and two, that they're doing the job so well. The football that they're playing on the pitch, the entertainment that they're providing to Liverpool fans and football fans around the world has been remarkable, really.
Yeah, and I think it's fitting as well that they're getting the success they've got, because they themselves appreciate what other people do for them. There's no big time player there that's arrogant and self-officiating. They all respect each other, and they all respect what each other does, and they all respect the people who work at the football club, irrespective of the minimal thing they job that they do. They all see it as very important, and they give the people the respect they deserve. And the fact they win it and they're good guys, it's usually beneficial as well, and it's also very fitting that they did, because they are very humane.
Yeah, Sir Kenny, you mentioned that there, the humility, the respect, that all comes from Jurgen Klopp, and it was amazing to see him straight away afterwards being so respectful to you when you were brought on. Just the legacy that you've left for those players and the tradition and history.
No, I only inherited that as well. I mean, everybody that's been involved at the football club owe a great deal of gratitude to the people who were there before we were in. Like, Shank set it up. Bob Paisley carried it on. Then Joe Fagan, Ronnie Moran. It just carried on through the years. And the football club is what it is because of what Bill Shankly and the rest of the people have done for the club. And when you come in, we were only one person walking in the dressing room, and the dressing room was very small at that time, and it was successful. And I think that's what happens now. I think the dressing room is very strong. And without a strong, successful and genuine dressing room, I don't think you get success. So, as I say, if you've played any partner at all, it's because someone else, we benefited from someone else's work earlier on.
Kenny, there's a huge connection with Liverpool and Ireland, and every weekend thousands of fans head over to watch games, and just the representation of Liverpool fans in Ireland is probably the highest of all football fans. And I think over the last year or so it's strengthened even more, and Peter Moore's tweet after the game about Sean Cox, I think it really meant a lot to Irish people, and it touched an awful lot of Irish people as well.
Yeah, well, that was hugely unfortunate what happened with Sean. It was a travesty. He only came to watch a match. Went in for a pint, came out, and some idiot turned up. It was all premeditated and pretty well organised by the Roma fans. But the football club has always been good at paying tribute to fans. And we came over and we played a game in Ireland in Dublin for Sean. And that was a great occasion for him and his family as well. And it's great to hear that he's making a little move forward. He's progressing slowly, but he is progressing, and that's the main thing. And it's also an illustration of how important the fans are to the football club. They don't take them for granted. They treat them with respect. But as we said, nobody deserved what happened to Sean that night, and you feel for the family and everybody else connected with it. And if the club can do a little bit to help, then they will, in playing the game, help pay for some of Sean's treatment that he's going to have to endure throughout the years. So we're fingers crossed that it's successful, and just be grateful for the support that we've had from him in the past, and I'm sure we'll continue to have, and we hope we can enjoy it.
Absolutely. Why do you think there's such a deep connection between Liverpool and Ireland, Kenny?
I don't know. It was there when I was manager as well. We had, even when we were playing, there was an Irish chap called Pat Copley who came over and came pre-season with us, and he just followed us everywhere. And when I went in to work as manager, I met another well-known football personality in Ireland called Pat Devlin, who's had more clubs than Jack Nicklaus. but he's a great wee fella. And I worked with him at Liverpool, and I got a great relationship with the both of them as friends, and that's throughout the years. And I think the Irish people know that they don't, their support isn't wasted, it's no spoil. They know that the football club appreciate them coming over to see the matches. And the relationship will always be there and should always be there. And it was always nice to see a few of the Irish lads in the team. I mean, when we were playing and at the wee bit of stadium, you like to see Ronnie Whelan's, Matt Lawrenson, even Michael Robinson came in and played. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us, but Jim Beglin, Steve Staunton, there's always some young kids coming up. When I went to Blackburn, through Pat Devlin, we signed Damien Duff, who was turned out to be a fantastic player, and he's now, I think he's coaching for the national team now. So the relationship was there beyond Liverpool, but done and created through the time I spent at Liverpool and the people that I met through working at Liverpool. I carried that on into Blackburn and Newcastle and everywhere else I went.
Kenny, you went to Liverpool in the 78-79 season, and from the time you, I suppose, finished there in 89-90, you left an unbelievable legacy. Do you think Jurgen Klopp can continue on and win more league titles and bring Liverpool back to the greatness that Liverpool people are used to?
Well, it's always the same, isn't it, Ruby? When somebody's so successful, one of the first early discussions is, oh, how long do you think he's going to stay for? By the way, it doesn't matter how long he stays for. Just enjoy how long and every moment that he is here, because we have done so far. So let's just enjoy the fact and be proud of the fact that we've got the best guy for the club in place at the moment. And Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool Football Club are like a happy marriage. They're so well suited to each other that it's difficult to see how the players are going to move on without them. But as I say, that's only people try to stir up a bit of trouble, a bit of mischief. I think
I am a United
very,
fan,
very
so I'm kind of hoping he will move on. Sort of
well, soon. Well, see, you've got to come out, and the truth always comes out, Ruby. The truth always comes out. You must have the same situation with Fergie.
We still haven't replaced him. I hope it doesn't take us as long to replace him as it did Liverpool to replace you.
Well, no, I would hope not. But as I say, he'll be there as long as he wants to be there, and it'll be a sad, sad day when he doesn't want to be there. But like everything else, it comes to an end at some stage. But that's just somebody trying to stir something up and spoil the moment for Liverpool fans. There is nothing on the horizon. There's nothing to think that it's going to be like that.
Kenny, he's revered now in the city like you are. Do you see any similarities in the way that you manage and the way that he manages?
No, I don't know. I certainly wouldn't mind his teeth. He's got a teeth, isn't he? I wouldn't say for that. No, he shares the success that he has. He wants to be successful. But he's not wanting to be successful for himself. He wants to be successful for everybody that's involved at Liverpool Football Club. And I think, for me, that was a philosophy that I had as well. Yeah, you enjoy the success, of course you do. But you're not thinking that it's only down to you. It's down to the hard work that an awful lot of other people put into their jobs as well. And without that, you're not going to get success. And it's also about quality of the players. And the quality that the players have at Liverpool is fantastic. So, long may it continue. And if there's any similarities, then other people can judge that. Not me, I'm just happy that he's successful.
Another thing that stands out about him and that group of players as well is that they're able to handle the history and the tradition, because there's a weight that comes with that as well, but they seem to carry it very well.
Yeah, but the history and the tradition of a football club, if it's successful, that's what attracts people to the job in the first place. So you can't be attracted to it and be afraid of it, or it doesn't happen for you. So the success in the history is there, and it's been done, and it's fantastic for the club, and it's great to look at. But you're not playing against that. That's it's a huge advantage for you to have that. And if people are afraid of it, then you don't want them to come to the club. And they've done that. They've handled that really well.
I think they've had plenty of success now, to be honest with you, and it's time to move it on, to tell you the truth.
He's given us enough time now, that's it.
That's about limit.
Is that Ruby get a tear in his eye there?
A tear? I can barely look up. I can hardly go to work. That David Casey has me plagued at work. It's just killing me. But anyway, well, Kenny, thanks a million for taking our call. And
Ruby, no problem.
I suppose you better say well
thank
done.
Thank you very much.
I wish we had You'll Never Walk Alone to play now. Kenny, thanks so much.
You did that. If I could sing, I would have come out and had a couple of lines, but I can't
sing. Thank you. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. I have to say, Ruby, fair play. You pulled it out of the bag. You got Kenny Dalglish to take a call from us a couple of days after Liverpool won the league. That's top drawer stuff.
I'm fairly sweating here, Marie.
He's like Santa. He's delivered big time. Hold on.
So how do you know him? Horse racing?
I know him through David Casey, actually, who I used to ride with and still work with, who's Willie Mullins' assistant trainer. And I did meet him in Aintree once or twice, but David had a number for him. So that's where we got in touch with him.
All right, well, fair play. Yeah. Appreciate it. Now, Alan Colley is with us in studio to talk all things football. I can't even think of anything that's happened over the weekend because I'm still in heaven after talking to Kenny Dalglish there for the last few months. Good weekend, Alan.
Yeah, great weekend, but I enjoyed that interview as well. Even as a Man United fan, I thought he was in very good form, Kenny Dalglish. Why wouldn't he be? And yeah, well done, Ruby.
Yeah, well, speaking of Man United, they are in the FA Cup semi-final. So we now know that the last four are Man United, who will face Chelsea. Arsenal will play Man City in the semi-final. So are you impressed with Man United?
It's a tasty lineup, Marie. I wasn't impressed with Man United, no. And just, we were here last Wednesday, was it? And they played Sheffield United, and probably the best they played all season. They were really, really good. Obviously, Pogba was back in the team, and everybody's speaking about their relationship with him and Fernandes. You had Martial, Rashford, and finally it was the makings, or looking like the makings of a really good side, United. Then he goes and makes 7 or 8 changes at the weekend, and it was back to old Man United, the slow pedestrian kind of laboured play, and it was hard work against Norwich. And the question I would ask, Marie, is you build up that momentum. I think they're unbeaten now in 12-13 games. Why would he not just play the strongest team, go 2 or 3 up, and then take off some of the big hitters? You can make 5 substitutions and bring on lads then, because I think the problem he has, he can't make the changes like a Liverpool can or a Man City, because he doesn't have
or
the squad.
Or Chelsea, as they did.
Or even Chelsea. He doesn't have the squad and he doesn't have the quality. So when you're making 7 changes and you're bringing in the likes of Dalot, Lingard, the type of these lads, like, to me, they're deadwood at the football club. These are lads that you want to be getting rid of. So it was hard work, and they could have got caught out, because Norwich, to be fair, after they equalised, looked like they were maybe going to go on and win the game. Then they had the lad sent off, and once he made a few substitutions, Solskjaer, and brought on some of the heavy hitters, obviously they won the game in extra time then. But I just felt he couldn't play the strongest team from the start, Marie. Continue the momentum that you're on, win the game comfortably, and then maybe worry about making changes once the game is won. But they got through in the end, and the semi-final does look good. Obviously you have Man City, who destroyed Newcastle. I never seen a more one-sided game in all my life. It was incredible. And then lo and behold, they had a brilliant chance, Newcastle, the one kind of breakaway they got, and Gale missed a sitter, but Man City totally dominated the game. Sheffield United were caught with a sucker punch right at the end, and they were really unlucky. I felt sorry for them, and I feel a little bit sorry and a bit of sympathy for Chris Wilder, because they've had such a brilliant season, Marie, and we spoke about it again on Wednesday, because since the restart they haven't won a game, and it just goes to show how quickly the wheels can come off. And I would hate to think they will come off and that they'll start sliding down the table. I felt as though what they've done so far this season probably deserved to get into the semi-final, but Arsenal caught them at the end. Still have major question marks over Arsenal. To me, they're a very average outfit. So Man City have the best of the semi-final draw, and I think United will be up against it against Chelsea, because they've had a brilliant restart. I think they've won 4 games on the trot now, and a good win against Leicester City as well. So it does look like it's going to be a good semi-final lineup.
Do you think Chelsea were good against Leicester? I thought Leicester looked sharper and were probably, I think, a bit unlucky.
I didn't think they were great in the game, Ruby, yesterday. You're right, against Leicester, but since the restart they've looked very, very good, Chelsea. But I thought what Lampard did at half time, he made a really, really important decision. He brought off 3 of the young lads and showed them a bit of tough love, which I felt was the right thing to do, because Mason Mount, Billy Gilmore, and Abraham, they've all done very well for him this season. But the fact that he was willing to make that change at half time, a tough call, as I say, but the right call, and he brought on Barkley and Kovacevic, and in fairness then once he brought on the substitutes, I felt they were better in the second half and probably deserved to go through. But I think Chelsea, you look at the signings they made as well, obviously with Werner and the lad from Ajax as well as Ziyech, I think Chelsea are on the up, and I think they'll, if anyone's going to close the gap with Man City and Liverpool, I think it's going to be Chelsea.
Alan, do you think when Norwich go down in 3 weeks' time, there's any way Ole Gunnar Solskjaer buy that Tim Krul?
Well, he has Henderson as well, Ruby. Does that mean you're agreeing with Roy and you'd get rid of De Gea as well?
I just thought that Tim Krul basically kept Norwich in the game all his own the other day.
He is. He's a very good goalkeeper. It's actually surprising to see that he's with Norwich. And who knows, as you say, if he was to get relegated, maybe someone might come in for him. They will get relegated, obviously, but he's a good goalkeeper. But Henderson, who I think has done very well at although I felt he was poor for the second goal with Arsenal yesterday, I think he'll come back at United and start challenging De Gea. And I think that's what De Gea needs. Sometimes, Ruby, you can get a bit complacent and you can get into a bit of a comfort zone, even though I think De Gea is a brilliant goalkeeper. But sometimes I think that's where the mistakes can stem from, because you know you're going to play every week, and obviously he feels that. I think Henderson is a very good goalkeeper, and if he's to come back, I think they've extended the loan Sheffield United for this season, but if he's to come back for the new season, he'll certainly challenge De Gea.
There was some positive from United though. Ighalo in the box, he looks alright.
Again, Marie, like if you're relying on Ighalo, I know he's done well, don't get me wrong, since he's come in, and what I like about him is the fact that he actually cares and he wants to be there. He makes no bones about that. I think he tells everybody how much of a fan he is, and he loves the fact that he's like a lad who's won a prize to play for Man United. But I just think
take his attitude and put it into some of the other players, maybe. Like Lingard.
The likes of Lingard, Dalot, these lads, you know, they have no future at the club, in my view. Well, they certainly shouldn't have a future if you're trying to close the gap on the likes of Liverpool, who we just spoke about, and Man City. They just won't cut the standard at all. And I was just surprised at Solskjaer. As I say, I know you're probably trying to keep lads happy, but it's not about keeping lads happy, it's about winning the games. And I think if he plays the strongest team and it keeps that momentum going, because for the first time all year I genuinely felt watching them against Sheffield United that they looked very, very good.
So what's success then for Man United this season?
Trying to get into top four, I think, Marie, and win the cup. Why not go and try and win the cup? The FA Cup, I know people, it's lost its glamour, but I certainly feel as though if it's there on offer to win, you look at Lampard and how seriously he's taken it. He wants to win it, won it as a player. He'd be delighted to win it as a manager. I think Solskjaer should be the exact same thing. I know you're probably prioritising because he has the Europa League as well, but I think whatever competitions you're left in, go and try to win them all.
Alan, from an Irish point of view, McGoldrick nicking a goal for Sheffield United was a good sign.
Yeah, especially considering it's his first goal, I think, since 2006. And that's me being a bit harsh. No, he just doesn't score goals, Ruby. And especially for such he's a brilliant player.
You just wouldn't notice it when he's playing for Ireland because we don't score goals.
No, and he's such an infectious character as well. Like, you listen to Chris Wilder talking about him, he's absolutely mad about him. The fans love him as well, which is so strange for fans to love a player, a centre forward especially, who doesn't score any goals. And he actually doesn't score goals, but he did nick one at the weekend. And I thought they were going to go on and win it then. And as I say, I've a soft spot for Sheffield United, and I've obviously the Irish link as well with Enda is there, John Egan. I would just hate to see their season peter out after them doing so well so far.
What about Watford? The players going out to the party and being suspended and missing the game.
No, sure, it's ridiculous. And especially when you think their teammate Troy Deeney was the most vocal out of everybody in the Premier League about not wanting to come back. And then you have players doing that. Did you see the one with the tennis players, Zverev? Did you see him over the weekend? Yeah. He was involved with the thing with Djokovic as well. So he had to go and isolate for 14 days. There he is at a beach party yesterday, giving it socks. Sometimes you wonder what's wrong with these people or these lads, but... I don't know, Marie, to be honest. I think he's come out and apologised, Andrea Gray, but I don't know. Like, why do you leave yourself wide open to this stuff?
Your beloved League of Ireland got a bit of stick yesterday in the paper, Alan.
He was waiting for this now. I just like to.
You were loving that, weren't you, Ruby?
Yeah.
You still haven't come to the match with me.
I wasn't loving it, but when I read it, and it, in facts and figures, it did read fairly stark and fairly cold.
No, and to be fair, I read the article, and it's hard, as you say, you can't argue with facts and figures, absolutely you can't, but certainly what I would say to that, if you're comparing like with like, I don't think you are in that situation, Ruby, because I suppose you're comparing it with the horse race, and you look at the investment.
No, I more meant the soccer comparison at the other end. like with all the other countries like Croatia, Finland, Slovakia, even comparing it to Denmark and Norway and Scotland, all of those comparisons more so than horse racing, I thought.
Yeah, and even that's a fair argument as well, because, but again, it goes back to something that I always say, there's a reason that the league here is so far behind all the other countries, and I've said it many times, we're 25 years behind other countries because of the negligence that was shown towards the league here over a long, long, long period of time, Ruby. And everybody knows now about the previous regime and exactly what went on. So there is mitigating factors. As I say, it's hard to argue with facts and figures, but certainly I would feel as though if the right structures were in place and if the love was shown to it like it is shown to other sports, I certainly think we'd be well up the ladder, and we should be in this day and age in 2020, we should be a lot further up the ladder than where we are at the moment.
But Alan, we haven't even got a decision on a format yet, so we don't even know 100% if it's coming back, and if so, then what way is it going to be? So the latest is that the clubs are divided, the two divisions. They don't know what kind of an up down they want.
Yeah, and again, that goes back to obviously the new governance that's in play now and the new regime. I think at this stage, Marie, it's up to them now to make a decision on it. For far too long, we've had meetings about meetings, and they've given far too much leeway towards the clubs in terms of letting the clubs sort it out or letting the clubs decide what they would want. I think now they have to show some leadership from the FEI from the top and actually say, look, this is what's happening. We've had enough meetings. This is exactly what's going to happen. You're either on board or you're not on board. For long enough that we're arguing over the money and the pot, to be fair to the FEI, they got the money and they got the pot and they got the funding from the government, which helped massively. So now that that's sorted out, as you say, they're trying to sort out the best formation in terms of relegation, promotion, and again, self-interest is at play everywhere when you're trying to decide the best formation, because everybody will have their own needs and their own kind of cares, and they won't worry about other places. So I think it's up to the actual board of the FEI now to say, look, we've had enough meetings, this is the date we're coming back, and this is the structure on the new league, take it or leave it.
Just on that, Alan, like we chat about governance, and it, of course it starts with the FAI, but is there a responsibility on the clubs as well, you know, to have, you know, their ship in order so that stuff like this doesn't happen? It's gone on too long.
Yeah, for a long time as well, Dunica. Any arguments we've had over the last 2, 3, 4 years or any discussions we've had around that, I have always thrown in the line at the end of it. It's easy to blame the FEI, and of course they should be blamed for a lot of what has gone on, but also the clubs have a responsibility as well to do things right and do things right and proper. And here we are talking about, you often hear the line thrown out, should the FEI break away and should the leagues break, the clubs break away from the FEI. I would actually hate to see that, to be honest with you, because the clubs find it difficult to run themselves. So you could imagine them trying to run a league, and here we are in a situation where it's kind of been passed on to them now how best to structure the league and coming back, and there's no agreement whatsoever, and you will never get agreement amongst, what have we, 19 clubs. So that's where I'm saying about Dunica, about the leadership terms coming from the FEI and the top down. But you're right what you say, the clubs could do a whole lot better, and certainly in a situation like this where we find ourselves in kind of unprecedented times in terms of the pandemic, you were always going to have to get buy-in and sacrifices from clubs. As far as I can see, we're not getting that. You still have disagreements. You still have people trying to do what's best for them. And that's why it's gone to the stage now. Here we are 4 months arguing into this. All the other leagues are back. All our sports are back. And here we are still cribbing and crying. So I think it's a case now that the FEI have to turn around and say, we've had enough of these meetings. This is the structure. You either take it or leave it.
And the thing about it as well, like, all the conversation is negative. So it's very hard to attract audiences, to attract people when it's negativity all the time. But then when something good happens, like when we get an opportunity to go and see Jack Byrne, or you have Jordan Flores goal, like, then that does make it more appealing to people. But they just shoot themselves in the foot then, because here we are nearly 4 months on and we have nothing to talk about except off-field matters.
Yeah, and they don't help themselves, Marie. And if you go back to the early part of the season, I was in here in the studio and we spoke the very first night, the opening night, and I was never more optimistic about the season ahead. And obviously there was a new regime in place. This was all before the pandemic hit, but there was a new regime in place. I genuinely thought we might see some proper change from the top. We had a lot to look forward to in terms of the league. As you say, the clubs, Shamrock Rovers, a very good team, Dundalk, there was so much to look forward to. We had that brilliant game, I think it was the third or fourth game into the season, live on telly as well. It looked great. Even Ruby thought it looked great and he was complimentary about it.
He might even go to a game.
It did, it genuinely did, and I was really optimistic about it. But as you say, Marie, it just feels like all that is forgotten about, and here we are arguing over the same kind of things that has gone on over the last number of years. And it's draining and frustrating, and for people who might tune in, I'm sure they've tuned out at this stage to it.
That's a fact. But Alan, to make it appealing, if you think about it, there's thousands of kids playing soccer in Ireland today, kicking a ball here, there and everywhere. Do any of them aspire to play in the League of Ireland? What's their dream is to play in the Premiership, and that's always going to be the struggle.
Yeah, but I think there's a major opportunity now, Ruby, with the whole Brexit thing as well. And if you get the right structures in place here at a domestic level in terms of the League of Ireland, and you had a proper functioning league and industry in this country, you would see a whole lot more players actually staying here before going away, because it's much, much harder for young lads to go away now and actually make it in terms of the standard that's over there at the top clubs, and also them casting the net far and wide all over the world. Years ago, when I went away myself, it was lads just coming from the home nation, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, Ireland. Nowadays they're coming from all over the world, so it's much, much harder for a young Irish lad, and that's why the opportunity is there now to actually capitalise on this. Again, if we had the right governance and the right structures in place, we brought in the national leagues underage, which I think are a good thing. There's arguments over whether the under 13 is the right age to start them at. You have Shamrock Rovers doing brilliant work in terms of their academy. Bohemians are linked up with St Kevin's Boys as well, so there is some good stuff going on. You look at the underage international teams have done very well in recent times. I think with Stephen Kenny taking over can only be a plus as well, with the links that he had with the League of Ireland. So there is stuff there, Ruby, but again, it's getting the right people in place to capitalise on this, to actually implement proper change. Whether we'll see that, I was optimistic that we might. The more and more these arguments go on, the more and more I feel confident.
Well, as you said, Alan, there are meetings going on about meetings, but hopefully we will have some news over the next 24 hours as the clubs decide what formation to proceed with.
Game On 2FM. Welcome back to Game On. League of Ireland, Marie.
Well, you know how I feel about it. I really like it. And you said there about kids not aspiring to play in the League of Ireland. I think that once they start going out and seeing the games every week, that they will. Like, if you're out there watching Jack Byrne, it's impossible not to want to be him when you grow up, especially when he's playing for the Republic of Ireland as well, like lighting up the pitch. And like, same with the Jordan Flores goal that I mentioned as well. Like, you know, kids want to do that. You know, you see Dundalk playing in Champions League on the TV. You know, you see the big glamour ties, and eventually the tide will turn. And Alan made a great point there as well. It's not that easy to make it in England in the Premier League anymore, so there are opportunities there. It's just capitalising on them, and hopefully that'll be the case in the future.
The dream has to be there. It has to be a dream. Yeah, so there does.
Okay, so speaking of dreams, the dreams of many other intercounty teams might have been given a boost because Jack McCaffrey has stepped away from the Dublin football team, reportedly. And to talk us through what this means for the Dublin team and, of course, the Championship, we are joined by former Dublin manager Pillar Caffrey. Pillar.
How are you, Marie?
Great, you?
Yeah, good form.
Good to hear. Well, I suppose your mood might have been affected slightly by the news that Jack McCaffrey will probably not be lining out in blue this year. What are your thoughts?
Well, look, Jack is one of the top five players in Dublin. So he big disappointment to think that he wouldn't be available this year. You know, like, when you think of past performances, it's been unbelievable. And you know, 27 years of age, probably best years were probably ahead of him. So, you know, it probably give boost to the likes of Kerry and Tyrone and Mayo. And it's a problem for Desi Farrell, because who'd replace him? Who'd give Dublin that edge in Croke Park in particular, where Jack's skill set of his ability to carry the ball at pace was unmatched by anybody in the game probably at the moment. It's going to be missed.
Definitely. I think you'd nearly go as far as say there's not really any other player like him with that ability to break defences apart.
No, he was, like, Jack was an incredible player, and I've seen him a lot from underage football, because he would have been the same age as my kids, and he was a phenomenal ball carrier in that he was nearly faster with the ball than he was without it. And yes, in the latter years, I'd say from the last 4 years, his defensive duties became more obvious, and he really atoned himself in terms of what he wanted to do defensively, and he became the complete wing half back. So look, if it is true that he won't play for Dublin this year, it will be a huge loss to Dublin. Obviously it will be an opportunity for someone else to step into the breach, but in terms of Dublin's starting lineup, he'd certainly be in your team every day you take a team.
I think he's starting every county, better to be honest with you, but we hear all the time about the commitment required to play inter-county GAA football and how much time he takes up. This is the second time that Jack has stepped away. Do you think someone of Jack McCaffrey's stature doing this, and maybe if he was to come back in time, could set a trend and show the people that you could drop in and drop out and maybe get longevity out of them going forward?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's a hard one to analyse. I suppose Rory O'Carroll is the other example who stepped out and stepped back in, and like Rory was a phenomenal fullback for Dublin and Kilmacode. And I would think when he came back, he wasn't as good. So he didn't actually reach the level that he was at. Like Jack's game is based around pace and reading up the game. He's 27 now. I just think, look, a lot of people would say that Jack McCaffrey is one of the greatest looking wing halfbacks of all time. We'd respect the decision, and you'd be saying, you know, it's about who's next to step up. Is an opportunity for someone else that we don't know about. But like with Desi Farrell and his management team, I'm sure it's a big shock, and they'll have to reboot and see what's available to them.
Yeah, just on that pillar, like we've been lucky enough to have him on the show. He's such a straight-talking, balanced young man, but you know, you can't. He can't do stuff half-hearted, so he wouldn't want to get involved. You know, of course, work for him, a doctor. He needs to be on it. So, other commitments are quite high.
Yeah, and look, it's a fair question, but you would have to think. Look, we haven't heard from Jack himself. I would know his father, who's a doctor, and his mother's a doctor, so medicine is huge in the family. And of all the families involved with Dublin over my years, like Noel, you know, I played with him, but he was pretty much, you know, his own man. He made his own decisions, and I would say Jack has taken on that. I would say Jack has taken on that mantle himself, in terms of he's made his own decisions, and that's to be admired, really. You know what I mean? He's always been a brilliant individual, but he's always seen the bigger picture that he's involved in the team, and I think we have to admire anybody that's involved in medicine, and they probably know more than the normal layman in terms of what's going on, and you know, we have to stand back and admire what the decisions they're making. I don't know if it's purely based on Jack's job, or maybe he just feels he needs a break or whatever, but you know, inter-county football has got to such a level that a lot of people will feel under pressure in terms of maybe this, you know, the COVID 4 months will reassess in terms of where people are at.
Peter, you've been there before managing an inter-county team. The pandemic, a key player leaving, how difficult does Desi Farrell have it now over the next few months?
Yeah, it's a tough job. Tough job now in terms of, you know, the club scene, and a lot of players are going to be involved with clubs that are going to be getting the latter ends of the club championship. And you know, if Desi doesn't have access to them, it's going to put a lot of pressure on the whole system, and then throw in a couple of new rules that are coming in. So I think it's probably made it a more level playing field. You know, obviously you look at the draw and you see Tyrone or Donegal going out in the first round, and you see Cork and Kerry meeting in the semi-final. So, you know, there's a lot of big hurdles along the way, but I think in terms of championship, you know, it's probably blown a bit wide open, and we don't know who else is going to operate out of or going to opt out of the championship going forward.
That's true as well. Well, what I'm taking from you there is that it's there for the taking for anyone this year, Pillar, and that's exciting just from a fan point of view, because you know, it's going to be back soon, and that's what we want. Excitement.
Yeah, no, look, at everyone's looking forward. You know what I mean? Like, we've all missed it in our lives, and GAA people up and down the country are dying for it. I think a lot of people are hoping for an open draw, but look, there's a lot of big draws coming down that, you know, hopefully this championship gets underway, and there's a lot of big draws to look forward to, and there'll be huge games early on, and I think that's what excites people.
Absolutely. Pillar Caffrey, thanks so much. Game on
2FM. Welcome back to Game On. Of course, at the weekend, the live sport in Ireland was horse racing, and it was the Dubai Duty Free Irish Derby, where Aidan O'Brien won his 14th, but it was also a fourth win in the race for Seamie Heffernan, who joins us on the line. Seamie, how are you?
Fine, Ruby. Good to hear from you.
Well done. It was a great weekend. Santiago and Magical, things are going great.
Yeah, seriously, again, I'm in a very lucky position at the moment, that I'm getting some of the best rides in racing, so I had a great weekend.
Obviously, you're in the hot seat because of the quarantine regulations or rules that are in place at the moment, and Ryan Moore can't travel to Ireland. How are you finding it as number one?
Going racing is a little bit weird, but we were off for about 8 weeks, and it was great that they were able to get it up and running. Very, very... very weird protocols and all. I mean, the washing and the spaces in the weigh room and everything is really, really weird. But at least the breeders can get a chance to see their horses running, so it's good.
And what about being number one, Jamie? Is that different?
I've been there a long time, and I've had the pleasure of riding seriously well-bred horses, preparing them. Listen, everything that's run with me, I'll take and try and hand it to the best where I can, so it's no, I'm handling it okay.
We're not ages here at all now, but I am going to bring up your age because it does when the commentary when you win and there's commentary, people do mention that you're 47. But John Magner said over the weekend that he didn't even know you were 47.
Yeah, I suppose I'm very lucky. I was very late, immature. I've never really gave everything probably 100%. And that's why I've lasted so long.
I don't know about that. You're in Ballydoyle since 96. You started your apprenticeship with Jim Bulger. You can't exactly say you've had it easy.
Well, I probably don't know how to work under any other circumstances. So, listen, I'm really enjoying it. And when you get a chance to swing your leg across some of the best horses in the world, it's very rewarding when you get to that.
How do you stay going for so long, though? Like, as in, consistently at that level for such a long time, there must be some sort of a secret to it.
Yeah, well, I remember Ruby coming down and working with us for a while, so I suppose I've always been watching the likes of Tony McCrae, who's a bit younger than me, Paul Carberry, Willie Supple. You know, there's loads of lads, and there's loads of lads that didn't get the chances and probably just didn't have the ability to make it to the top, but there's a huge amount of people that really, really enjoy what they're doing and to give it their best shot. So I was always busy watching them and watching how to improve. And I've stayed in the game without barely knowing the hardship.
And what about fitness training? Like you are at it a long time. Is that something that you do or that you brought in at any certain stage, or do you just go out to work?
No, I go out to work, and the work gets me fit and gets me sharpened up. And the one thing that I probably have got worse at taking is the feet. It really, I don't hate getting beaten on a horse that should have won easily. It's getting harder to handle, I suppose. When you get that bit older, you know you're running out of chances. So I probably only have 5-10 years left.
Just a 5 or 10, yeah, no doubt about it. But Jamie, obviously last weekend was the Curragh Santiago one, and next weekend will be Epsom. I know maybe it has crossed your mind, but the Irish Oaks is not until the 18th. Is going to Epsom on the cards for you and doing 2 weeks quarantine?
I've looked at it and I've looked into the quarantine things, and I think the Wednesday after Epsom, the government are trying to do something with the protocols. But for me, Ruby, I would love to go to Epsom and ride another classic winner. That is the true test. But because I'm first jockey or giant first jockey here with Wayne Lorden, I'd lose out on too much in Ireland, so it's kind of bouncing around in my head, and I haven't said it to Aidan, but I would love to go to Epsom, but I won't make the decision until the last minute. At the moment, I probably won't be going.
Yeah, and we look at the Derby, obviously Aidan entered plenty, Russian Emperor, Mogul, Vatican City, Armory, Serpentine, Mythical, and around Naveen. I can't wait to hear the English commentator trying to get that one out. But it looks a red hot Derby with English King and Cameco as well. Do you think you have a strong bunch of 3-year-olds going there?
We have, and what we have this year is we have very unexposed 3-year-olds. Normally they would have a run or two, and we would know the very best, but he's been training them away that they're still unexposed. Some of them will go and disappoint in the track, and some of them will step up. There's a few of the colts recently have been stepping up hugely. So, you know, the Guineas is probably the best Derby trial, but it has to stay the trip.
The do indeed. And obviously the Oaks is on the same day, which is a first for it as well. And Aidan has love, peace, Valena, Simon and passion in it. Like, even the second string there is a great ride. Jeez, you must be tempted to go.
The second string would be a serious ride. And I was going through it the other day and I was looking at the prize money. The prize money in England is probably going to be the reason why I don't go.
That's right. It's absolutely it's been slashed completely, hasn't it?
There's a lot of prize money here in Ireland up for grabs for the 2 weeks quarantine I'd have to do compared to picking up the full check for the English Classic. But that will have something to do with the decision as well.
You got to go on Magical at the weekend, and she was magical. An Able run Sunday. Could you see them clashing somewhere down the line, a King George or a Yorkshire Oaks or something like that?
Definitely. They clashed plenty before, and an Able has always come out and talked. But Magical, she couldn't have won any easier at the Curragh. It was a push-button ride. I rode her just like a piece of work. They'll definitely clash, and she's the one that has forced an Able most lately in her career, so I'd be on the team with Magical, so you know which one I'd be shouting for.
Well, I hope she gets her revenge at some stage as well. Shamey, thanks a million, and the best of luck going forward.
No problem. Thank you, Rumi.
Thanks, Jamie. A bit of news that he might be interested in, guys. Buffon, Gianluigi Buffon, has signed a new contract with Juventus, and he's 42.
Wow, fair play.
He's 7 years younger than Jamie. 5 years younger than Jamie.
I love it. And he wants to go on for 10 more years. What a beauty.
Guys, I'm just going to finish the show with a little bit of sad news. 8-time All-Ireland Camogie Championship winner Eileen O'Mahony has died. She was a Dublin native and she played as a goalkeeper. She was named on the Camogie Association's Team of the Century in 2004. She had a career that lasted from 1949 to 1957. She won 8 All-Ireland medals and captained the team to victory in her final year. So sad news there. And that is all we have time for, guys.
Game on 2FM.